Did you ever watch the new High School Musical television program?
I did. It's actually quite fun.
It's quite fun. I'm in Rodrigo Town, but I haven't watched.
Yeah, no, it's actually quite fun. Would recommend.
Hello and welcome back to Relatively Football, your favourite women's football podcast, brought to you by siblings Theo and Flo Lloyd-Hughes, two sides of the Atlantic, but lots of love for the beautiful game. My name is Theo Lloyd-Hughes and I'm here with my sister Flo. How's it going? Happy Sunday afternoon. No matches today, Flo, just yet, but it's always good to see you.
Cheers. Yeah, I'm a tad hungover today. Woo. Tad hungover, tad sleepy. After a big night of Eurovision partying, and I did see lots of the women's football Twitter community getting involved, and some Relatively listeners as well get involved in the chat on Twitter. So I hope everyone had a good night last night and enjoyed some of the Eurovision action. Always a great night, one of my favorite nights of the year, Eurovision.
Stay hydrated wherever you are in the world, listener. And we've really missed a trick there. Relatively Eurovision probably would have been our biggest episode ever if we got down to it.
You're so right. Next time. Frank Kirby had a party with Miriam Yelda.
I know, big outfits. Forgive me for not knowing, but what was the in-joke with Mielda's outfit?
She was dressed up as one of the performers. I think it might have been performer from this year, because the outfit looked like one of the guys from last night. But I don't know the exact ins and outs. But yeah, they went all out. They had proper fancy dress. We didn't do that last night. It was just pizza and vibes.
And beyond the pizza and the vibes, which is always great to hear about, favorite song, favorite artist of the night?
I'm a huge fan of the San Marino collaboration with Flo Rida. And a lot of people were dissing it on Twitter, but I actually thought it was an absolute banger. And I can't believe it didn't do that well. So that had to be my favorite of the night. I thought it was classic.
Wow, what an upset. All right, well, we're going to run through some news, listener, give you a little heads up on what's going on. We're going to run through a little bit of news around the leagues, around the world of women's football, and then we'll jump into a little quick NWSL roundup, and then we're going to get to our kind of main feature for today's episode. No on the whistle, no WSL games to round up, but Flo and I are going to break down our teams of the year. We've both gone for some slightly different styles in our teams of the year, but kind of highlight players, some of which you will definitely be very familiar with, and some of which that maybe, in my opinion, have been lost across the course of the season, but have really had put in a fantastic year. So we're going to kind of break it down in a bit of a different way, as the two siblings do, for a relatively end-of-year WSL review. And Flo, let's jump to some news then. You were talking to me before we clicked the record button about some of the comings and goings this year. It's been really cool to see a lot of WSL clubs publishing their end of year release lists, making sure everyone knows, very transparent, who is getting a new contract, who is not, who is moving on. And obviously then comes the rumours of what comes next for some of these players. But yeah, what's jumped out to you on the kind of early transfer news, just, you know, a week, 10 days after the season officially finished?
I think two things really, in more in the sort of retained and sort of departures list, two clubs in particular really stood out, Brighton and West Ham. Brighton, because it was just a bit sad, I think, because they had quite a lot of departures and a lot of them are leaving because of long-term injuries or struggling for fitness after recovering from bad injuries, Laura Rafferty being one of them, who I think did her ACL maybe like a year ago now and never really played much for Brighton, and spent this season on loan at Bristol this year and got a couple of games, but hasn't kind of maybe fully recovered from that injury. Rebecca Stott, who's obviously going through treatment for cancer, is going back to Australia. They've got a few players retiring, and there's others I think in that squad who well have had injury problems. So I think that was just kind of almost like a sign of the times, and maybe a bit of sort of progress for Brighton in some ways, because players who may have been there a while, but now Brighton might be looking to the future to bring on kind of talent where they might see themselves now and where they finished this season so strongly. And then West Ham, just so many outgoings. I'm a huge Martha Thomas stan and I'm really gutted for her. she will be leaving. And I know, I think why I'm surprised about her as well, because she's someone who actually works really well in Ollie Harder's system, because she's very fit, she's very athletic, and she works really hard. She's good for that high press. And obviously, Harder has a very specific style of football he wants to play and has had to inherit a squad and work with them to the best of what he could. And I think there are lots of players that inherited that just couldn't do that. And it's not a surprise to see some of them leave. I think Kenza Dali being one of them, and she probably deserves to play at a better club as well. But yeah, Martha Thomas, I was surprised at, and she's been really unlucky, and she's craving just a bit of confidence and maybe a drop down to the Championship and a double digit scoring season is what she needs to then get another shot in the WSL. But I really do believe in the Martha Thomas project, so I'm really gutted to see her leave. And I think the fans really liked her as well. So, I mean, Emily Van Edmund is obviously not a massive surprise, probably deserves to be at a bigger, better club as well, and probably been one of West Ham's best players this season. So a couple of surprises there, I think, in the West Ham departures thing. And also Jack Sullivan, who is leaving and won't be managing director anymore. So it's a real kind of refresh of all refreshes this summer for Harder to, I guess, get a shot at building a team he wants to play this football with.
Yeah, I mean, one of the biggest takeaways for West Ham, I suppose, is they reset under Ollie Harder without Jack Sullivan, is who they want to keep around, who is the core players on this team. And I think giving Grace Fisk another 2 years is a big statement.
She's been phenomenal this season, and I think that news is great. And a much needed positive, I think, because it will be difficult with so many people leaving as well, who've been quite a big core part of this season as well.
Yeah, I'd say she's had an up and down season, but not necessarily just down to her. It's obviously been a really up and down year for West Ham as a whole. And like you said, kind of how they figure out who they are. I think Brighton and West Ham are at kind of similar positions in the table, but almost polar opposites in regards to how their season finished. Brighton broke lots of personal records and looked to maybe be trying to figure out how they sustain this newfound level, or maybe they drop down slightly, but it's not, there's kind of somewhere between where they were in 21 and somewhere between where they were in 18-19, kind of 19-20. So I think these teams are in very different places. Brighton got deals done with Victoria Williams, who had a really great second half of the season, and Megan Walsh, who split the minutes with Fisker Strands in goal, but I think has shown to be a really promising keeper at this level. So it's cool to see her keep her place. There hasn't been any news yet on Danique Kerkdijk or Inessa Kagman, the two Dutch players that Brighton have. Kagman especially was responsible for about 60-70% of their goals, if you count goals and assists. And their creativity often went through her. So I think whether or not they can hold on to Inessa Kagman will be huge for Brighton. She might see herself maybe going back to an Everton or going into Europe. We don't really know. But I think that's an interesting movement to watch on the Brighton side. The big news is that Maya Letizier and Emma Koivisto are under contract, Brighton
Thank
fans.
God.
So have no worries.
Maya Letizier is an exceptional talent, and I'm really excited to see how she pushes on next season. I think there is a really positive strength in depth in England's defence, much needed as well for the future. So I think that's been a positive of this season, because I think there's some frailties maybe England have had in the past, and Horton and Bright, that partnership isn't really going to last forever. Horton's probably only got a year, or maybe that the next World Cup in Australia, New Zealand is going to be probably her last, realistically. So I think it's great to see these bright spots for England coming through, because the current first team, like starting 11 England, is not the youngest 11 in the world. So I think it's been a good season to see some positive green shoots of young English talent coming through.
Nothing yet, listener, on where Iwabuchi is going to end up, although it looks like Arsenal might have a deal wrapped up with Kenza Dali as well, rumoured to be going to North London. And nothing yet on the Arsenal manager, although it would be quite a neat fit to see Casey Stoney end up there, although kind of stylistically, I don't know if that would be the right move for Arsenal. But we'll definitely keep you updated when we hear things. Flo, do you want to pop over to the NWSL and do a quick roundup of there before we get to our end of year WSL feature?
I'd bloody love to, because Orlando Pride can't bloody stop winning.
I know, Flo, after 412 days without a win, they got their first win in a long time at the Challenge Cup about a month ago, and now they've put two back-to-back wins to start the 2021 NWSL season. Flo, your new favourite team is absolutely loving life. Sydney Leroux, Alex Morgan, two goals yesterday, fun celebrations referencing Ted Lasso, which I have not watched, and yeah, lots of fun. The mums are getting it done. What you got to say about that?
Yeah, brilliant. I mean, I said, I think it was last week, maybe week before, how much I'm into Orlando Pride at the moment. And I know Craig Hadley's a big fan. And yeah, I'm just really getting on this hype train. I just think also it's funny is kind of the wrong word because that sounds a bit rude. But I think it's great for a team that everyone laughed at, not only because of how bad they were on the pitch, but everything that happened with COVID and the Challenge Cup and them not being able to go. But they, you know, almost took the joke on themselves and laughed at themselves and ended up winning awards for what they did with their social media accounts then. And they've now turned that actually into results. And a team that have so many great personalities are doing lots of great work in the community. And you just want to root for them. I think they're just extremely likable in so many ways. And then they've got this awesome kit as well. And I just, yeah, I think it's great to, because you want to see legends of the game like not almost fade out playing crap football. So I'm just so glad to see them win and beat the Courage. Obviously, Courage this season aren't the same that they used to be, but that's a huge win for Orlando.
Away from home as well. And I still think it's a really good North Carolina team. A lot of people are saying, oh, well, you know, beating Carolina this year is not the same as beating Carolina in previous years, which is probably true. But I still think going into the season, maybe I rated them too highly, but I still thought they were, you know, third or second best team in the NWSL. So to win away from home. And I think touching on what you were saying about their reputation, there were some good quotes from Paul Riley in the post-match press conference where he was talking about the old Orlando Pride were trying to be artists on the ball or taking too much time, losing possession, maybe being too protective. And then he called the new Orlando Pride sort of, they don't want to play football. They just want to smash it long and get a goal. And I think you kind of saw that salt, that bitterness kind of played into Orlando Pride, maybe enjoying this result even more than just normal. Another big result for the weekend was Racing Louisville got a win in their first home game on Friday night. This was a really, really fun one to watch. Regular season home game, that is. Ekic scored a fantastic goal with this kind of heavy touch, taking the ball away from the defender and then curling it when it looks like the angle's not quite on, bending it into the bottom post. Amazing goal. Amazing scenes, as we've seen, listener, with the purple lights and rave. Although I do want to shout out Nikita at Crypto Banana, who is a fantastic photographer in women's football and all football. And they were saying that actually, if you turn the lights off too soon after the goal is scored, you won't get any good goals celebration photos. So Racing Louisville Stadium, we know you're listening. Do watch out when you turn those lights off, because we do want to see some great photography. Another result from the weekend, Chicago Red Stars played a 0-0 last night with Gotham FC. Mal Pugh coming back into the picture and looking really good up front. We saw a little bit of Midge being free and a little bit of Midge not being free. Although she did make a fantastic tackle at the back post to keep it 0-0. Gotham, the hype train goes on, but this was a pretty promising point for Chicago, who struggled recently. So getting a draw at home against a good team definitely won't go unnoticed by the Chicago fans. Flo, anything else from the three NWSL games this weekend so far? There's another three today, or another two today, listener, and then there's some midweek games as well. Flo, anything on that?
I don't think so. I'm just, yeah, really obsessed with the Orlando Pride right now. Do we know when Ebony Salmon's going to make her debut yet?
That's a good question. I think the jury's out. We haven't seen any photos of her in Louisville, as far as I know. There's a photo of her with a shirt.
She might be having a bit of a break or something.
She might be having a bit of a break. I also think there's visa issues. Right. Angharad James, who has signed for the North Carolina Courage.
I did see the chat in the press conference about her visa issues.
So I haven't heard anything from Christy Holly or the Louisville people, but Angharad James has been told, or the press have been told, that they haven't squared away the visa yet. So if you kind of assume the same thing's maybe happening with Ebony Salmon, then...
But it doesn't seem so bad that will make the deals collapse. It's just taking longer than they'd like.
It would seem that way, yeah. Gemma Bonner, Ebony Salmon, Angharad James, all these UK players are yet to kind of come in and make an impact.
Well, listeners, we will for sure put something on the Twitter feed when the debuts might be happening, and we could all jump on Twitch together and enjoy the moment.
Yeah, and listener, if you ever do have any questions about UK to US immigration in regards to visas, I have a lot of information.
Yeah, we can charge you for a free consultation. Oh, no, not free. They'll give you a free initial consultation, then they'll charge you relatively visa advice bureau for any future references.
High key, relatively humanitarian operations. I would love to offer more free visa consultations and immigration advice to anyone out there, because it is an absolute pain in the ass, yeah, and has been the bane of my life for about 5 years. So yeah, if you are ever thinking about it, or you're worried, or you think you've done something wrong, DMs are open. Flo, WSL finale teams of the year. You want to get down to it?
Let's do it.
All right, why don't you go first? Because I think you've gone tradish, and I think I've mixed it up a little bit. So let's open the discussion with the Flo Lloyd Hughes relatively football team of the year.
Yeah, I think it was half my hangover and half just not reading our WhatsApp messages properly. But Theo had a great idea to get creative with the team of the year, where you have to have a player from every team represented. So that was one of the WhatsApp messages. And then I saw a second message, which was just like a reminder, this is what we're covering. And it said WSL team of the year, manager of the year. So I was like, perfect. So my version is a lot more straightforward. And I think I only have maybe one controversial pick in the team, and it's not even that controversial, it's just a player who only played half the season here, but I do think,
I hope it's Rachel Daly.
I'm so sorry, but I do think she was very impactful in her time here, and we hopefully are going to be seeing more of her in WSL. So I'll run through it quickly because it isn't that exciting, and I think yours is going to be more interesting. In goal, Anke Trimberger, I mean, golden glove, some legendary spectacular saves, the one at City.
I was gonna say the pre-assist against Man City. She had two fantastic games against Man City, the 2-2 where she gets that phenomenal title award winning save at the death from that corner header, and then she has that pre-assist in the first City game at King's Meadow, where she kind of draws Sam Lewis in on a press and then kicks it over. And I think there's, yeah, Anke Trimberger from the penalty spot, during games, from open play, she was fantastic in every phase of play that a goalie can be.
Yeah, so I mean, yes, Ellie Roebuck had a good season, just missed out on an extra clean sheet, having not played in that last game. So they would have been tied on clean sheets if Roebuck had played in that last City game, but she didn't play in the end. I think she was injured. So yeah, great season for Roebuck, but I don't think she had some of those big game moments like Berger had, but obviously I think she would be, you know, up there if it wasn't. Right back, Ona Batier, phenomenal for United. Ooh. This season, one of the most talked about defenders, I think, and lots of rumours about where she's going to next. I think obviously because of what happened with Stoney, I think we're going to see a lot of departures from United this summer, which I think is a massive shame. And she could be one of them, you know, people saying she's going to go back to Spain, potentially go to Barcelona, etc. So yeah, I think she's my right back choice. Theo will be interested to see yours. Centre back partnership, I think I've got to go for the title winning partnership of Eriksen and Bright. I'm not the biggest Millie Bright fan, and I think when she makes mistakes, they're pretty bad mistakes, and she always has a couple of sort of botched clearances in her, and it's something we see a lot more for England than we do for Chelsea. But I do think the stability of Eriksen next to her and just their partnership in general, I just think has been unreal this whole season. So they are my two centre backs. And at left back, Katie McCabe, who has been one of my favourite players, yeah, all season, and by far Arsenal's best and most consistent player this season. Chipped in with tons of goals and assists, and yeah, she's just been really, really good. Playing a 4-3-3, so now we get into my midfield three, where we have my one sort of like wild card pick. Sam Lewis, huge Sam Mewis fan. I'm so heartbroken to see that she's going back to the States. I'm really, really hoping she's going to stick around for another year. I can understand why Roosevelt wanted to go back. I know it didn't quite work out for her here, but it seemed like Mewis had just so seamlessly slotted into the OSL and was just bossing it, really. So I'm really gutted to see her go back, but I think she had a really good season, like, considering how well she fitted in to do what she did this season, just been so impressive. Mainly Leupolz had a tough couple of weeks. Had a tough couple of weeks of this season. Wasn't great in the final, Champions League final, obviously it's a WSL team season, maybe it's a bit different. And I didn't think she was brilliant in that last game, in the last game for Chelsea against Reading either. But across the season, she's been really, really good. This is her first season with Chelsea. Also, someone who's chipped in with a little with goals when she's needed to, and she's been very consistent. And then my third midfield choice, which is where we get the sort of wild card, is Manu Obuchi.
Wow. Okay, unpack that a little bit.
So obviously, we didn't see loads of her. Only came in January, and then also missed some games because of traveling for international duty and like quarantine and all that fun stuff. But I'm kind of picking her there based on impact, and she just really transformed Aston Villa from nothing really. And on a number of occasions, she basically like put the team on her back and just either scored or created or things from nothing. So that's why I'm putting her in. But that's probably my only kind of like crazy pick. And then my front three, I think, you know, probably most people would pick these ones. It's Frank Kirby, Sam Kerr, and Chloe Kelly. Absolutely heartbreaking Chloe Kelly's injury, and I just hope she recovers so quickly. I'm absolutely gutted for her. But what a season those three have had. So exciting for English football, how well Kirby and Kelly have been doing this season. And Kerr, you know, all she needed was time, and most people knew that. But boy, this season has she just looked like she's absolutely loving life. And I think she's the kind of player who plays her best when she's happy and she's enjoying things, and she has that freedom and that confidence. And it's just so great to see. And it rubs off on her teammates as well. So, yeah, I think it's a pretty obvious team, I think. It's just Iwabuchi, maybe the slight wild card.
All right, so here we go, listener. My team of the year, like Flo alluded to, was slightly different. So there's 12 aspects to this team, 11 players and a manager, and there's 12 WSL teams.
I didn't pick my manager, but it's for me, it's a bit of a tie because, like, Emma Hayes, obviously, but I'm a huge Carla Ward fan, and I think...
Who had a tougher job this year than Carla Ward?
Yeah, and what she did, the amount of fires that she had to fight was just ridiculous, and keeping that team up when a lot of us had them as favourites for relegation, them and Bristol City, really, is huge, huge, huge job. So I think I'm maybe just going to give it to Carla Ward, who's just going to edge that as my manager of the season. But, oh, I mean, Emma Hayes is Emma Hayes, do you know what I mean? Like, the trophies speak for themselves, and she's a wonderful character. So I don't mean that as like a discredit to the Hayes stands. But yeah, what Ward did was amazing. Back to you.
So yeah, like I was saying, 12 aspects to the team, manager and 11 players, 12 WSL teams. So it's the best of the best, but a little bit from everywhere. Makes sense? All right. So, manager flow. Who has
it's just,
been...
It's just 11 Rachel Daly's. Best of the best.
Best. In goal, Rachel Daly. No, manager of the year flow.
Yeah.
Who else? Who else gives us hope?
Oh.
That this world is gonna be okay.
Something inside so strong.
So strong.
So, yeah.
Hope, pal, is the manager of the year, and there is no one close, in my opinion. She got so much out of that team. She improved on two previous great years with Brighton and has just done a fantastic job.
But this means you can't have Koivisto or Kagman, so...
Koivisto or Letizia. Kagman, very close. Or Letizia, honourable mentions, but they are not in the 11.
Wow.
I felt like compelled to give Hope Powell the credit, not just because she started the season with her classic hard task master routine, 4-4-2, keep it simple, let's, you know, be Brighton, let's be Hope Powell. Halfway through the season, Brighton are struggling. She calls everybody in. She opens up. She goes vulnerable. She talks about how club football is still new to her, how she's still learning. She gets to grips with the players and she gets a tremendous response. The only league team to beat Chelsea this year, which is a huge feat. And even beyond that game, the way their football improved, the way their determination and cohesion as a unit improved, I think showed so much about what the manager was able to get at these players. Bringing in a player like Koivisto, you know, maybe there's a sporting director's role there, but I think that was a huge gain for them, give them a bit of fresh blood. And I think, yeah, like I said, Hope Powell, who is already an experienced manager with an incredible career behind them, I think was able to find new levels, new growth, new strategies this year. And for me, that makes her the manager of the year.
Love it.
Love it. All right, in goal, this is where... So yeah, Brighton's off the table now, 11 more positions left. I had to go with Hannah Hampton. Kind of like you were saying about Carla Ward, no one else had a harder job than playing in goal for Birmingham. 66% save percentage, which, you know, I think is incredible considering the amount of shots she had to face. I think that's only about ranked the fifth in the WSL, but when you think about the amount of shots she had to face, I think that really says a lot. A young player who's had to deal with, you know, some emotions throughout the year about whether or not she's going to make Team GB or whether or not she's going to make England. And I think she's done an amazing job playing so much football at such a young age, showing how technically gifted she is and also growing as an individual. So for me, in goal, had to be Hannah Hampton.
Oh, wait, should we do some like little relatively graphics maybe for this? I'll do the homework. I'll actually do the assignment and read the question properly, and I'll do a version of this, and we can see how they
we
match
can get
up.
The votes.
Yeah, do a little
absolutely
poll.
So right back, I've gone Aston Villa, and I've gone Asmita Azi-Ayle. Yeah, she for me has been an absolute. I mean, she's been a young player with a lot of plaudits coming out of the Championship the last few years, signing a new contract at Villa in the summer, a player that Ennio Luco has heaped a lot of praise on, very much a player who's grown up with Gemma Davies as a manager, who's developed her game. She has some young Lionesses caps. But I think you saw her throughout the season in a year of inconsistencies and mixed messages in Aston Villa. I think she was a player that thrived and always brought the same level of performance when a lot of other Villa players maybe were going up and down or weren't sure what they were being told by the manager. So I think Asmita Ayle is just such a fantastic professional, even at 20 years old, and I think is going to become, hopefully, alongside, like you're saying, Maya Letizia, maybe the future of the England back four. She was fantastic in the back five. She was fantastic in a back four. I think she shows so much versatility. And like I said, I think more than anything, a consistency to always match up with the winger and communicate well in case she's got to kind of commit to a tackle or drop back. I think really, really versatile player who just had a really fantastic season. A little bit under the radar there, that one. For my centre-backs, Flo, you know, I love your centre-backs. Arguably the best two in the WSL. But I thought I wanted to highlight maybe two players who have really improved this year or kind of shown off to be top tier whilst maybe not being Millie Bright and Magda Eriksson. So I had Lottie Wobbenmoy and Millie Turner.
You know I love Wobbenmoy. You know I'm a huge Wobbenmoy stan.
Yeah, I very nearly went with Katie McCabe to be for the Arsenal position in the back four, but I kind of felt like Lottie Wobbenmoy's had a fantastic year on and off the pitch, both as a character in the Arsenal dressing room. Her, you know, a bit like Leah Williamson, growing up and an Arsenal fan, playing Arsenal youth, going out to UNC, getting that, you know, elite NCAA education out there on and off the pitch. And I think she's also shown up on Twitter as a great voice for this league and a great voice for young people that want to believe in these players as great icons and role models. And you know, you won't have to label that on people, but I think Lotte Wobbenmoy is showing to be the kind of face we want for the WSL. Who knows how to speak up. And I also think her play on the pitch has been amazing, and she's a player I didn't know anything about coming into this year, and maybe she was what, top three, top four Arsenal players this year. So to be playing Champions League football next year, I think Lotte Wobbenmoy has had a fantastic year, and kind of like Asmita Ayle and Maya Letizia could be the future of England to come. Millie Turner, very similarly, I think she had a really rough end to the season, and I don't think, you know, it maybe if we were doing this team of the year in January or February, Millie Turner might have been in your team of the year flow, but she definitely dropped off.
Yeah, the Turner partnership first few months, I was singing their praises big time, and I think it was a tough second half of the season for United in general, when I think we talked about how their fixture list was kind of front loaded in some ways, and they faced a lot of the big teams at once. But I think And I, it seems now there was probably a lot more going on behind the scenes than we knew at the time. But yeah, it was a rough couple of months, I think, for all of them.
Left back, it's Rhea Percival, the Spurs player, New Zealand international. I think she had another fantastic season. Again, kind of under the radar. She's just been given a new contract by Spurs, which I think is fantastic news. And I think she's a player who, especially when Rianne Skinner came on board, really bought into what the team was doing well. And I think when we saw Spurs at their best, maybe they were pressing a bit higher, being a bit less cautionary, or being a bit less kind of in second gear, it was often because Rhea Percival was the one bringing the juice. And I think I was kind of torn between her or Kit Graham for a kind of Spurs member of this team.
Yeah, that's probably the first pick where I've sort of thought, interesting.
Who else would you have had from Spurs?
I'm a huge Angela Addison fan. I think she's a really bright spark, and whether she starts games or she comes on as a sub, she is a game changer. I was a bit disappointed with her at the Chelsea game, second last game of the season. I thought, because she has so much energy, she needs to sort of be contained and tamed a little bit. She can be a bit of a loose cannon on the pitch, but I think when she can kind of sort of shape that and do it in the right way, she's really hard to handle. But we didn't quite see much of that in that Chelsea game, but I think she's been really good for Spurs. And then I would agree with you on Kit Graham as well. I think she's been really good. And I think Alana Kennedy as well. She was really impressive in her first few months, and then picked up an injury the last couple of weeks of the season. Second half season for Spurs, all in all, wasn't fantastic after Rhian Skinner had that really good kind of like 3-4 game run. So yeah, I feel like there's some other players who might have got the nod ahead of that for me.
Rhea Percival, second in the WSL with tackles, with 45 tackles on the season, so just over 2 a game. Just going back to Esmeeta Ayle, 79 interceptions, leads the WSL in interceptions, so more shout out for Esmeeta Ayle having a great season. Moving into the midfield, I also went for a 4-3-3, so my midfield three was Izzy Christensen from Everton, Jess Fishlock from Reading, and Emily Van Egmond from West Ham. I think, you know, Fishlock didn't quite play the full season, but I think she left a huge impact on the WSL. And I think when you look at Reading's Player of the Year, it probably would be Ang Harrod James or Jess Fishlock. And I think Jess Fishlock just brought a little bit extra oomph and verve, you know, that good mix of needle and quality. And definitely, I think she really looked refreshed coming back to the WSL after all these years. And it was really sad to see her go. Sad to see her go out with that kind of bizarre 5-0 loss to West Ham as well. But I think in the time that she was here, she really did it all. And I think she showed that she's a top quality, kind of world-class player. And the NWSL is lucky to have her. Izzy Christensen, you know, going back to this idea that, like, where do they rank in the league / where do they rank on their own journey? I think this was a real redemption year. And I don't mean that in any kind of big criticism, but I think it was Izzy Christensen's best year for a long time, in a zone where we saw her both on the ball and off the ball, and especially from set pieces, kind of really roll back the years, and was a fantastic player. Maybe the most consistent player in a very inconsistent Everton team. You know, I thought about Hayley Rasso. I thought about Valerie Govan's brilliant start. But for me, it felt like Izzy Christensen was the player who kind of all the way through the season was kind of given 100%. And West Ham was a tough one. You know, we talked a bit about Grace Fisk. I thought that could have been an option. Maybe Martha Thomas, who did struggle a lot this season. Rachel Daly, although she only played 7 matches. But I felt like Emily Van Egmond was probably the most impressive West Ham player. And even when things were really bad and the body language was bad and the tactics were bad, it felt like Emily Van Egmond was the player who was going to kind of pick them out of a very dark spot and grab the game by the scruff of the neck. And then my front three, as alluded to, got Chloe Kelly on the right, Ebony Salmon down the middle, and Sam Kerr on the left. I felt like these three players probably are the three that will make a lot of other people's teams of the year. I think, you know, Salmon's 6 league goals and 2 cup goals are huge for the quality of her teammates and in what Bristol were having to put up with. She does so much on her own. She's such an exciting player, really, really clever runner, the way she finds space. And so I felt like Ebony Salmon had to be in there. Even if I wasn't necessarily doing this style of one player from every team. And like you said, Chloe Kelly, you've already talked about her, just such an amazing progression for an already elite player. And Sam Kerr, I know I couldn't quite squeeze Fran Kirby in here, but it's almost like Kerr and Kirby were this beautiful partnership that we may never quite see that top quality balance between two players ever again. So that's my team, Flo. How are you feeling about that? Any feedback? What do you think?
No, I like it. I like it. I think it's a nice reflection on the season. I think there is a fair amount I would have done differently.
Love that. That's what it's about. It's about debate.
But I will come back to you once I've done my homework.
Yeah, I think it's a good exercise. I think something we really believe in Relatively Football is making sure we highlight the whole league and seeing the WSL as one organism. It's not just about Chelsea, Man United, Arsenal, City and eight other teams. And I think we want to see the whole English football world grow. And that could be us talking about the Championship. It could be us talking about grassroots, National League. You know, we are obviously limited by what we can watch, what we can attend, what we have knowledge about. We're not going to talk out our ass about things we don't understand. But I'm a big believer in seeing the season as more holistic and seeing people's journeys as individuals or teams' journeys, you know, Brighton finishing sixth, for example, as a big deal. And so I want to kind of track this as it goes. And this team was a way of me saying that. Listener, get back to us with what your WSL team of the year is. Like Flo said, we'll maybe get a little graphic up and she'll do hers. Listener, follow us on Twitter at @RelativelyFoot, Instagram at @RelativelyFootball. Go give us a review wherever you listen to your podcast. Share the siblings with the world. We're here to have a laugh, here to talk some serious football chat. And we've got a big summer ahead. We might be taking some elongated breaks as we wrap this season. We kind of wrapped it up this episode. And then we'll make sure you know what's going on, if there's any big news, maybe some fun topic episodes and a Olympic team breakdown. Flo, I did have one thing I wanted to ask you before we get out of here.
Go for it.
Craig Hadley did send us a question.
Oh, yeah.
Where will Leicester City finish next season and who's your pick to win the championship?
You know what? I'm really intrigued to see how Leicester do in the WSL. And I've asked a lot of people this exact same question that Greg's asking us. And most people have been quite confident in saying they think they'll do well and won't be in a relegation battle. I think what's going to be interesting about Leicester, and this is exactly what we saw with Aston Villa too, is a real battle between, not battle, that's probably unfair, but a huge shock in that push up to professional top tier women's football. One, most if not all, I think, of that Leicester team are full time now anyway, but the foundations of the team, the family environment it's been built on, you know, has come a long way. That the foundation of that are in amateur football, in a family environment, a very close knit team. And they've only got these additions and support from the club very recently. They've been building this for years. And I think, in a way, Aston Villa is similar. Like, a lot of those foundations were built by Gemma Davies and players who weren't full-time. And then suddenly this huge jump up and step up. And it can be a bit shock to the system. I think Leicester, though, do have a good group of players who have WSL experience already there. Remy Allen being one of them, Tash Flint being one of them. So I think I give them a good shot. And I think there's some more additions on the horizon. They're going to have a good season. And by good season, I mean, I don't think they're going to be in the relegation scrap. And what was the other question?
And who will then win the championship?
Who won the championship? That's an interesting one. Because Sheffield United, it doesn't look like they're going to be going full-time anytime soon. I expect, like all these things, it's just money and budgets, and it doesn't help that the men's team have just been relegated. So obviously things will tighten up after that. So I think that will hold them back. If they were going to push on and go full-time, I think they would have such a good chance because, unfortunately, I think because they're not going full-time, they're going to lose a lot of their really good players this summer. I am here for a Matt Beard redemption at Liverpool. I do think there's still a lot of shit that he has to sort out there. Just this week, you know, we saw more stuff about players being treated terribly, and there's just so much bad culture that he's going to have to sort out.
I know your mates are Matt Beard, but I do not want to see Liverpool succeed. You know, the absolute joke of the You Never Will Walk Alone or whatever it is. And letting that club not invest in their women's team. You hate to see it. RIP Liverpool, see you in hell. I'm going to stick with my prediction. Chef U, let's get it done. No budgets, no problem. Sheffield to go up, and Leicester will finish 10th. All right, let's get out of here, Flo, and enjoy your Sunday evening. Stay hydrated, drink lots of water, and get some sleep. I'll see you later.
See ya.